For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
He's been here.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone.
He's been there.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
He's been everywhere.
Shot from there and a save and a rebound. Yes! Score! Yes! Kings win the cup.
Sobel.
It's one small step for man.
Ted Sobel.
One giant leap for man.
The man, the myth, the legend.
What the hell's going on out here?
Now, one-on-one with Ted Sobel.
Hello, friends. Jim Nantz here, and you're listening to Touching Greatness. Yes, this is a wonderful tradition. You could say unlike any other. With Ted Sobel, right here.
Well, thank you, Jim Nantz, and we have your neighbor on with us this week with the start of NFL 100, the century mark for the National Football League. And I can't think of another perfect person to join me here on Touching Greatness than the man they called the Dean of NFL referees, my friend and my high school principal at Fairfax High in Los Angeles from 1968 through 71, and a man who has seen it all and done it all and still a kid at heart at the age of 90. Dr. Jim Tunney, amazing career, 40 years in officiating football and basketball, 31 of those in the NFL as a referee, working a record 29 postseason games, including 3 Super Bowls, 10 NFC-AFC championship games, 6 Pro Bowls, 25 Monday night games, and he officiated some of the all-time memorable games in NFL history, including the Ice Bowl, the Kick, the Snowball Game, the Final Fumble, the Fog Bowl, and appropriately, the 100th Bears-Packers game as they begin the new season with a Thursday nighter in a matchup at storied Soldier Field in Chicago. When I was up at Pebble Beach recently on Father's Day to cover the U.S. Open, Jim invited me over to his nearby house, and what a pleasure to sit down and talk not just about the old days, but also how he sees the National Football League today. And as you're listening, try to imagine the incredible scenery surrounding the Monterey Peninsula, one of the most beautiful spots on the planet. Welcome to Touching Greatness and a special edition of the 100th anniversary of the start of the National Football League. And I'm in my principal's office and not in trouble with Mr. Jim Tunney, who was my principal at Fairfax High School just a couple of years ago. Jim, it's always great to see you.
Thank you. It was a couple years ago to me. It seemed like yesterday, no question about it. But I don't think you were ever in my office then either, Ted.
I think no, that, I wasn't.
You behaved yourself pretty well at Fairfax. Yeah.
Let's talk about a little bit of those days, too. In the 60s, it was a different world. And, boy, you had a responsibility of not just being a principal, but almost like a moral leader in some respects, don't you think?
Well, my job in 1960, when I started with the NFL, I was the vice principal at Lincoln High School in East L.A. in the Lincoln Heights area, and enjoyed it over there very much. I was there 13 years. But when I moved to Fairfax in 64, then all those years I would work Monday through Friday. I was in the school building. And Saturday morning I'd go to LAX and get on an airplane and fly to Green Bay or Baltimore or Dallas or someplace to work games. In fact, 1960 was the first year Dallas was in the league, and Tom Landry was the coach. I don't think Tom Landry got in the playoffs for 4 or 5 years. In today's market, if you didn't win 4 or 5 years, you're fired.
Yep.
But Landry lasted 29 years and very, very, very successful. But my first year, I was my first game was in the L.A. Coliseum. It was a preseason game, Chicago Bears and Los Angeles Rams, and the Bears had come out by train to Los Angeles.
Wow.
And I met the head coach of the Chicago Bears, the founder, the creator, the owner of the Chicago Bears and the founder of the league, George Halas. And I met him on the field, and my job as a field judge in those days was to meet the head coach and find out who his captains were, I said, Mr. Hollis, my name is Jim Tunney, and I'm here to get your cap. Oh, Tunney, yeah, you went to Occidental College. You played football, basketball, and baseball. He knew me better than, wow. than I thought. How would he know a little? It's my first year. I was 31 years of age. And he said, well, welcome to the National Football League. Anything I can do to help you, I knew he was trying to get me on his side, but
sure.
it never worked. But I worked many games for the Bears when Hollis was there. After that game, that was on a Sunday. The next Sunday, they took the train up to San Francisco, and I worked the Bears and the 49ers. So I saw them back-to-back like that. And 49ers, I don't even remember. Buck Shaw, I think, was the coach at that time. But nobody, unless the old days, remember Buck Shaw. But everybody remembers George Hollis.
Sure, right? Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think George Hollis would say if he was around today, seeing what this league is all about?
He would not watch it.
Really?
Yeah, he's a great football guy, from Decatur Staleys to the Chicago Bears, but the game today is not the game that he invented or he was part of. And I think he'd be disgusted to see some of the celebrations that are going on. He would say that, act like you've been there before type of thing. And it's a game of team. You can't get there. I mean, I never saw Gale Sayers spike the ball in the end zone. I mean, Gale Sayers crossed the goal line and dropped the football. The Sid Luckman that he had there for many years was never a showboat, but he was very famous in what he did.
Sure.
But Hollis maintained the discipline and the decor that he wanted for the Bears. In fact, most teams did. Most teams said, we don't do that for our team. We don't show off. We're not trying to be a person. But today it's a lot of me-ism and individualism that I think George Hollis would be very upset about.
How much of that, though, also comes into play that the marketing end of it, because there's so much money, people didn't have to do that then. It wasn't like you were going to get all these incredible endorsements early on the way they're getting it now.
No, in fact, most of the players stayed in the city and worked there. In Green Bay,
exactly.
They stayed there and worked in the paper mills and things like that, because they had to have they always had jobs.
Sure.
But now some of that, you're right, Ted, some of that showboat now is to show who I am, and I could do this for your commercial. They don't think of that totally, but
sure,
it's in the back of their mind, and that showboat stuff is what television marketing, what the young people want to see.
How about separate from that, though, just the game itself? How do you see it? The evolution, in a way, is good, because from a health standpoint, obviously you don't want the concussions and all the negativity. At the same time, you want hard-hitting football.
They might want to go back to leather helmets.
I've heard that.
Because in fact, I've said for years, if you take the face mask off, and most of them had no face masks in those days, you take the face mask off and see the broken noses that the guys had in those days, but they don't stick their head in there without that face mask. They wouldn't be sticking their head in there like that. They'd be back blocking and tackling with their shoulders, which is what they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
Now they block and tackle with the head. They put the head in there. The fact is, we know with the targeting that it takes place today,
yeah,
you can't use your head. In fact, if you watch the runners today, when a runner goes to get hit, the first thing he does is drop his head. That's protection. A lot of head injuries now are a result of the runners hitting their head against the tackler. Not the tackler's fault.
Yeah.
He can tackle with his shoulder, but the runner's responsible. You never see a targeting foul against a runner. It's always against the tackler.
We're saving the quarterbacks now. They can play into their 40s easily, right? Because they're not getting hit all the time anymore.
No, they have a lot of protection they didn't have when Starr and Unitas and Jurgensen and those guys played, and they would get hit and knocked down. But they tackle differently. I mean, I've seen guys pick up Montana and not tackle him down and pick him back up, you know, because they had respect for him that way. And they know their job is they better knock him down, because that's what the coach wants me to do. But once he gets knocked down, he'll want to be back up again. So pick him back up and help him back to his feet. But the tackling was different. They tackled differently. And now they call it Terminator football. You run through the quarterback and you blast him. And if he goes out of the game, well, good. Maybe get a backup in there.
Right.
The backup's not the front-line guy, so he's not going to be nearly as good. But the Terminator football that just blasts through the quarterback is wrong. If they go back to just tackling with their arms and their shoulders, they'd be a lot better off.
So are you enjoying the game, watching it as much now? Is the evolution been a part of you as well? It's not a big deal?
I watch it every Sunday, every time I can, mostly because I'm watching officials and see whether they're in the right position. The game moves so fast now. When I started, we had 5 officials. Now we have 7. We're going to 8. and troubling all those people. Seven is good because now we have five downfield officials can cover five receivers. Before, we only had one or two downfield officials covering five receivers. But now they're throwing to all five of them. And so the five officials against five receivers, covering the five receivers is a good plan.
So what do you think about the rule changes in the last couple of years? And immediately coming to my mind, and perfect for you to answer this, is the Rams-Saints playoff game last year with the missed call and how that affected who went to the Super Bowl. And I'm sure you have thoughts about that.
Well, it was a mistake. There's no question about it. The Fisher should have caught it. It was an obvious pass interference. It wasn't one of those ticky-tacky little things. The guy just came across and blasted him. And I wrote an article about it some years ago. It's called Unintentional Blindness. And what it is that you and I are sitting close to each other, and I've got a stack of cards, and I'm doing a card trick, and you say, how did you do that? You were watching me from 5 feet away, and you didn't see me do that? But how do you do that? Magicians do it all the time. It happens to the mind. It's unintentional blindness. You're looking right at it, but you can't see it. It's just like a magician. Huh. And when things like that happen, yes, it's a mistake, but you see in the second quarter, Drew Brees threw an interception. That's also a mistake. You're not supposed to throw an interception. When you throw a football, there are three things that are happening, and two of them are bad. Incomplete interception. There's only one of those three that's it's good, yeah. And that's incompletion. Players make mistakes. They miss blocks. They miss tackles. They miss assignments. They throw interception. They do all kinds of things that are mistakes. Well, these are players. The game happens so fast it's going to happen that way. That's the same thing with officials. It's going to happen. Don't go too much to technology. I was there the first year NFL started with replay, 1986. And I liked it because we can get the play right. But now they've taken it to the point where you can call from the sidelines and say, I want to take a look at that on replay. It's interesting that when the official calls it, the coach might not believe him. But at replay, they'll believe the technology. Well, technology is only, you're looking at it three or four times.
Sure.
They have a game like that. It's called Madden 20. you can buy those video games.
Yes.
This is not a video game. This is played with real people in real time and real mistakes.
I think there's one simple answer to this, and I don't understand why it's not so obvious to everybody. Why can't you just have a guy wearing a striped shirt upstairs who has a monitor, and he can look at it, and they can go to him at any time? It's not anything special. He works for, he's part of the crew. Is that difficult, or am I wrong, or what?
Would you do that for interceptions, too?
No, not everything, but again, you can separate however you want to do it, whatever you feel the league feels is correct, that we can take some time, an extra 20 seconds, but you don't have to look extra. How about if he saw it and it was missed? For example, this Rams-Saints play, right? If he saw it, he presses a button, we need to talk for 5 seconds. He missed the call. Let's do it now.
Where do you draw the line?
I don't know.
Well, that's the issue. Is that how many, once you get to that point, then should you do it for other things too? How many of these, should you do it for a fumble before he gets to the goal line? Did he cross, did he break the plane at the goal line? Now all he has to do is stick the ball across the plane. You don't even have to be there.
Right.
I've always thought they'll never be able to change that. But why can't you have it where a player has to head his whole body across the goal line? Well, the ball's the governing thing.
Yep.
Could you go to that replay guy up there? Now, they do that this year, Ted. They do have, and we've had it for years now, we have an IRO, instant replay official.
Right.
And we have the official up there. There are 17 of those instant replay officials hired by the league. Nine of them have never worked a football game on the NFL.
Well, that's a little strange.
And you're not going to get ex-officials to go up there and sit there for like that. You can't, after you've been on the field a number of years, it's like pass interference. We have people on the field 5 and 6 years who still don't understand what pass interference is. Does this replay official up there have a better knowledge? If he has that kind of knowledge, then you'll put him on the field. And it's not going to work that way. But it's. I don't like the video replay that goes over and over and over.
I don't either. And Jim, I'm mostly thinking not necessarily replay official, but a guy up there who's part of the crew. He just happens to be upstairs watching it on TV, and if he saw that play and it was missed, he didn't even have to replay it. It's like, just hit the button. He throws his own flag from up there.
That's in effect now. The injury official is part of the crew now. And he had been for a number of years. There are seven officials.
Okay.
We have an injury official and a technician who travel with the crew, same crew, same guys. Some of them are ex-NFL, a few are ex-NFL officials. But the point is, where do you draw the line on it? And it's not so much replay official, but the competition committee. Do they decide which ones, where do you draw the line on it? Which one are you going to call and not call? And so I believe the game's played by people. People can make mistakes, quarterbacks miss interceptions, guys who miss blocks, miss tackles. Officials from time to time are going to miss a play. The official right now, the NFL office says that the official are getting about 96 to 97% correct every time. Best quarterback rating I saw was something like 65.
Oh, wow.
So it's different. The officials having a very high rate, and it doesn't make a difference whether they're part-time or full-time. If you watch the NBA, those are full-time officials.
Yep.
How many plays did they miss? In the hockey game the other night, several weeks ago, the guy hit the puck with his glove. Those are full-time officials. Full-time doesn't make you any better. Doing it every day doesn't make you any better. It's going to happen. These are things happen so quickly that mistakes are going to be made.
Yeah, anything out of the mouth of the dean of officials, I'm listening a little stronger than the average guy, Jim. That's the truth. I got to ask you, what do you like most about the game today?
I think it's because it's played with people. It's still 11 guys on each side of the ball. They still get four down to make 10 yards or make a touchdown. It's the game is a bit different than when George Halas was playing, except all the technology that's come in.
Don't tell George that, by the way. But they're faster, they're bigger, they're stronger, and people are just better athletes.
Oh, no question about it. The speed now and the size of these players at 6'7" and running the 40-yard dash in 4.4 or 4.5 at 6'7" and 230 pounds. I mean, that's incredible size now.
Would you have been able to do it the same if even in your younger days? Would you have had to work out a little more? Because I mean, you do have to be a little better shape than in the old days. And I'm not saying you weren't, but
I worked out every day.
I'm sure you did.
Every day, living where I live, I run on the streets and keep in shape and. And we still have guys, if you watch a receiver catch that ball, a Jerry Rice or whatever, he's running down the sidelines, and here's a 45, 50-year-old guy running alongside him. How does he do that? Well, he gets a little head start, but say you got to stay in shape. The biggest thing about shape is physically as well as mentally. Mentally, it's a tiring game, at 3 hours and so on. And you've got to be mentally ready for it, because at the end of the game, I was more tired mentally than I was physically.
Wow, you got to know your angles too, right? Save space.
When I watch the game, I'm watching for positioning. Is the official in the right place at the right time?
Interesting. 100 years, though. It's unbelievable. What an incredible anniversary, huh?
Amazing anniversary, yeah. I worked, in fact, speaking of 100, the Bears and the Packers are opening the season this year. I worked the 100th game that the Bears and the Packers played.
Oh, that's great.
In Wrigley Field at the time.
Okay, so I think you refereed more Super Bowls than anybody, is that correct?
Not so. I worked four Super Bowls, three as a referee.
Okay.
And one, and Super Bowl 11 and 12 were back-to-back, and nobody knows if referees ever done that
Got
before.
It.
So that's a singular one. It's a very nice thing to be able to do that. I'm not sure it should happen. I like officials who work on the field, have an opportunity in the league to work at least a Super Bowl when they retire.
So which one was your favorite? I was like, which one is your favorite kid? But of the games you did, the Fog Bowl, the Ice Bowl, the lot of bowls.
Probably the favorite was the Super Bowl 11, played at the Rose Bowl in Pasadena, Oakland Raiders, Minnesota Vikings. I grew up in San Gabriel, just 4 or 5 miles from the Rose Bowl. I went to Rose Bowl as a little kid. My dad was an official, worked for Pasadena Junior College, a kid playing for Pasadena Junior College, then with Jackie Robinson. I sat on the bench alongside of Jackie Robinson.
Right.
My dad refereed the Rose Bowl game between UCLA and Illinois in 1947. 30 years later, January 1977, I worked Oakland, Minnesota, in the same place my dad worked. That's kind of special for me.
Oh, absolutely. And your father, we talked about it on the phone before, being involved in the horse racing business for so many years, I wonder what he would be thinking about what's going on at Santa Anita these days. I'm sure you've seen, you know, with the deaths of the horses and all that. It's just, it's a killer to just think about it.
Yeah, he wouldn't have any control over it necessarily, but he'd be very disappointed with the things that are happening. We all are. Dad was in horse racing for 20 years. My brother was in it for 35 years, and they're very disappointed seeing what's happening in Santa Anita or other places. And it's too bad it's happening at all. But maybe it's technology that comes with the doping of horses and things like that, the medications that they're using, one way or the other, good, bad, right, or wrong. And maybe that's part of it. I don't know the answer to what's happening to the number of deaths in Santa Anita, but they'll come up with something and correct it.
Your father was head of stewards, is that correct?
He was head steward at Santa Anita, Hollywood, and Del Mar, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
What a time, too. That was like the ultimate time of horse racing, right?
Yeah, he was an official, so he started working at horses and thoroughbred racing in 1945. And so that was the beginning. And the reason they hired him is they said, you know what a foul looks like. And so we look for fouls because there were a lot of fouls, a lot of pushing and shoving and everything happening in horse racing at the time. They wanted to correct that, and so that's why Dad was hired for that.
Okay, so you ended up a principal at my high school, but how do you end up becoming an official? Is it the kind of thing, did your father open any doors for you, or was it something, I just want to do what my dad does, or?
I wanted to do it because they paid extra money.
I like that.
I worked Thursday night game or Friday night game. Before I worked in the NFL, I started working high school games, started working intramural games, things like that. And paying, in fact, high school was paying $12.50 at the time, and I could work two or three games. I make $37.50 on the weekend. I thought, man, that's like finding money in the streets. I like what I was doing. I loved it. I never thought I'd be at the NFL. The NFL was not very big in the 50s out here. So when I was doing the 50s in the high school and colleges, I just worked, and then you moved in. And you want to move up. All officials want to move up to the next level, so to junior college and the small college and the major college. And then I never even applied to the NFL. They came along in 1960 because they were expanding. Dallas was coming in that year.
Yeah.
Minnesota was scheduled in 61. They hired nine of us from that 1960, and I was one of those nine that they hired. I signed the contract at 30 years of age, and 31 I worked on the field. I was very fortunate, very fortunate.
Perfect. We're sitting here on Father's Day talking about your father. I love that.
My father.
I know, he's very special.
He was my mentor, my idol, my hero. Everybody says they love their father. You read on Facebook, I had the best father. No, you didn't. I had the best father and the best mother. They were. I'm glad I selected my parents the way I did. They were good people. Yeah.
Did he get a chance to see you in the NFL at all?
I don't think he ever saw me work a game. He died in 65, 5 years after. He didn't, even in high school games, he didn't come to my games. We'd talk about it, things like that, what would happen, and he could advise me. But I think he might have come to a L.A. Coliseum game because we lived in Southern California at the time, but that was about all, yeah.
That's great because, you know, the stories about your father, you could write a whole separate book just on that alone, I'm sure.
Absolutely, I did. In fact,
you did write about your father?
First book I wrote called Impartial Judgment, I dedicated to my father, who taught me to believe in myself.
That's
fantastic. What he taught me, yeah.
Okay, so you had a couple of stories before we get away here about what we did at Fairfax High in the early days, and you also wanted to talk about the fact that you brought in, or your help in within the on the campus brought in some of the great names to be able to perform at Fairfax High. I mean, it almost sounded like we were a studio and not a high school.
Well, I enjoyed Fairfax High School very much. 7 years I was there. And when I started there, they were having a celebrity assembly. If you bought a ticket to the celebrity assembly, you got to see all the football and basketball games for free. And we weren't selling very many tickets in those days. So the first one I got there in 1965, my first actually was 1966 when we were able to hire. I got a hold of a guy named Herb Alpert and
Heard of him.
Tijuana Brass, and we had them come to the campus. And they were followed by Sergio Mendes in Brazil 66 and followed by Alan Sherman, Hello Mother, Hello Father, and followed by Bill Cosby, The Fifth Dimension. We had just one right after the other.
You didn't mention the Birds from before that.
When I got there, the Birds were already on the docket for hiring. I didn't think much of the Birds myself, but that was my personal opinion. we got some good artists in there, and as a result of the people I got to know, Herb and worked for him for a couple of years as the educational director of his foundation, and then Bill Cosby and I became very good friends. Sorry to happening with Bill now, but he was a wonderful man for us and wonderful for our kids. Kids admired him and they loved what he did.
What has this entire journey for you meant? Thinking not just the officiating, but all the people you've met. I mean, you've just been around some wonderful people.
I've been very fortunate to meet so many people. Just the fact that I worked for Herb Alpert, and so one day I was speaking in Vegas, and Frank Sinatra was working at the Caesars Palace, and I called Herb, and I got a ticket that I didn't have to pay for that was in the third seat from the stage, and I met Frank Sinatra after that, and so many people that have been. Jim Nabors was singing for the Los Angeles Rams, the national anthem. I met Jim, and as I say, Bill Cosby, and working for Herb, Herb Bacharach has become a good friend. So over the years, it's been a very blessed life. In fact, my father said to me when I was a kid, count your blessing. I count my blessings today, every day.
Fantastic. Well, happy Father's Day, Jim.
Thank you, Ted. Nice to have you here. Nice to have a former student who was never in trouble in my office.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you on the podcast for getting me, you don't remember getting me personally, but being involved in that first sports challenge with Dick Enberg, because I got one of those six tickets. I was one of the kids that, we need a sports-oriented student. That was me. I raised my hand so high up, and I got a chance to be there for that first show and did the practice show before that, and that was fun.
That was great. Dick was a good friend. Dick, we've lost him, of course, but he was the announcer for the UCLA Bruins, teaching baseball at Northridge. But then he'd come and do the Bruin game. I was on the floor at Pauley Pavilion, open Pauley Pavilion, worked the first game at Pauley Pavilion. Yeah. And Dick was there. So then he went in the NFL, and he worked a lot of games with Morton Olson that I was in. So Dick and I became good friends.
That's fantastic.
They're good friends.
All the best to you, Jim. You look great. You're a young 90.
Feel good now. Feel good at 90. And I'm getting better every day what I do.
That's great. Great to see you at Pebble Beach, too.
Thank you for being here, too.
All right, thank you, sir.
Our thanks again to the Dean of NFL Refs, Jim Tunney, for joining us here on Touching Greatness, the podcast. Hope you enjoyed our little get-together up at Pebble Beach. So until next time, I am still Ted Sobel, and as I begin my 14th season on Sports USA's radio network broadcast of the National Football League, doubleheaders every single Sunday all over the nation, let's kick this season off already.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.